History Month, and a very important part of Black history is the music, and the roots of its music come from Africa, and so does this instrument called the marimba. So I'm going to be playing a couple things for us in the service today, and the first one is a suite of hymns that are generally sung in Spanish that I have arranged for the instrument, and later on you will hear some jazz. This is three hymns. Thank you.
I had this wonderful vision of thinking back to God Songs, our series that we've just been doing, and one of the phrases there was the famous phrase about the trees, you know, shall clap their hands, and as I hear this beautiful wooden instrument being played with praise, that was the vision that came up to me as well. Thank you so much, Janice and Music Ministry. Would you join me in prayer? God, thank you so much for the way that anything can praise you. Thank you so much for the ways that we can praise you, that we can come to you and find our strength time and time again when we are a little bit weak, when we're a little bit lost, when we're a little bit angry, when we're a little bit separated from one another. Come, Holy Spirit, bring your love. Do what you do so beautifully. Bind us together with cords that cannot be broken. When the stresses and the strains gone to of, the things that tear our world apart, our poverty, our racism, our sexism, our phobias against one another, and the many things that truly do come to steal and to kill, to take life from one another, from our brothers and sisters. God, may you truly wake us up. May you truly help us not to become apathetic. May we understand how deeply your Spirit has created us to be community, to be one body, just us, God. You have entrusted just us to be able to live out love in our life, to be able to allow your Spirit to flow through all that we are, to mold us, to make us, to use us beautifully in this world, that we might feel alive, that we might feel full of purpose, that we might feel hope once again, that we might feel that the life of another is so important to me that I cannot live unless I live alongside of this other. And God, when I'm lost, when we're lost, may you bring us earth angels, those people who see hearing and listening and watching and feeding and clothing and housing and advocating. Those people who see doing all of these things for someone who is lost. May you give me the grace to allow them into my life, that together we might truly bring about justice. In your holy name, bring us living word today. Amen. We talked about the way that songs can change the world and change us, and there's one more song that I want to bring into this. Help us bridge from the last series into our justice series. And it is a beautiful and important and world-changing song that was first written and first sung by Langston Hughes. Langston Hughes is one of our greatest American poets and novelists and playwrights. He was a part of the great Harlem Renaissance. And he wrote a new song earlier in the 20th century. And this was a song that really, I believe, sang through much of the events of the last century that continue to sing through communities today. And it is a poem that is called A New Song by Langston Hughes. And Hughes writes, "I speak in the name of the black millions awakening to action. Let all others keep silent a moment. I have this word to bring. This thing to say, this song to sing. Bitter was the day when I bowed my back beneath the slaver's whip. That day is past. Bitter was the day when I saw my children unschooled, my young men without a voice in the world, my women taken as the body toys of a thieving people. That day is past. Bitter was the day, I say, when the lyncher's rope hung about my neck and the fire scorched my feet and the oppressors had no pity, and only in the sorrow songs relief was found. That day is past. I know full well now only my own hands, dark as the earth, can make my earth body, my earth dark body, free. O thieves, exploiters, killers, no longer shall you say with arrogant eyes and scornful lips, you are my servant, black man. I, the free. That day is past. For now, in many mouths, dark mouths where red tongues burn and white teeth gleam, new words are formed. Bitter with the past, but sweet with the dream. Tense, unyielding, strong, and sure, they sweep the earth. Revolt! Arise! The black and white world shall be one. The workers' world. The past is done. A new dream flames against the sun. We celebrate in this church, as churches and communities throughout the United States and many other parts of the world are joining us in celebrating Black History Month. We celebrate in this country the Civil Rights Movement, a movement that continues. We celebrate that one of the great legacies that has grown from the Civil Rights Movement to bless all of us as a society. The legacy was not only about gaining justice from someone else. It was more truly about a community that rose up to empower itself with the freedom to create a just destiny in its streets, in its commerce, in our places of worship, and in a vision of a common wealth, a radical enoughness for all of us. This is a powerful vision, and it is a vision that continues to be one of the greatest challenges to the world today. Can we have a vision of enough radical enoughness? Can I coin that word today? Enoughness. A radical enoughness. Because I believe with all of my heart, to understand a gospel in the way of Jesus Christ is impossible without us diving into taking the risks, taking the chances of trying to live a life where we believe and we know that there is radical enoughness for all. Are you hearing me today? Radical enoughness for all. And where that calls us to go is to a place of radical sharing. Now, Christ doesn't just call us to normal sharing. Sharing with those people that we like, that we love, that probably we get something from in return. He says, no. If you want to know even more about the power and the potential and the vision of God's kingdom in this world, then you need to keep going. Going into a place of radical sharing with all your heart, soul, mind, body, and strength. Do you hear those words again today? Love God and one another with all your heart, soul, mind, body, and strength, with all that we are. This undergirds the powerful message that has been changing the world. You must love others as you love yourself. You have the right to love others as you love yourself. You can love others as you learn to love yourself. Do to others as you would have them do with you. That's what all of this is based on. And the empower thing, one of the things that I love following the way of Christ, you know, and I've learned many things from many other religious traditions as well, is I love how there's this radical trust in us. And so many times I'm kind of like looking over my shoulder. You know how sometimes when people say something nice about you, you look over your shoulder and you say, "Who, me?" I think Christ did that for us. I think he trusted us. I think he trusted us to say, you know what? A lot of times you don't really need intervention from an outside God. You have it within you. In community. When you get the concept of gathering as one body in love, you have the capacity to truly live and be and bring about justice in this world. Just us, we can do it. That is what Christ has promised us. That is a powerful, powerful trust, isn't it? And I love that because, you know, we have people who really get this, don't we? And I love our people who are so radical. About radical sharing and radical enoughness and radical community. You know, they've begun to understand that justice has, you know, several different components to it. That justice, a lot of times, you know, in MCC we built our movement on a vision of equality, right? That within justice we have to have a justice of equanimity. In the world, for the world to truly live into this promise. And we also have other definitions of justice. There's distributional justice. Distributional justice is a component of being just us, which says it is important that people have a roof over their head. It is important that people have an opportunity for education. It is important that when someone's sick, they can get health care. Oh, come on, I'm about to preach on that. It is important. It is important. There is no justice without that. And sometimes we inherit limited visions of justice, and we get into the who deserves what bit. And we think, oh, you know, I'll give to so-and-so because they deserve it. I may not give it to this person because I don't know if they deserve it. I may not share what I've got because they may not deserve it. And the great leveler of Jesus Christ in what he said to us, you know, is if you want to think of it in that way, well, you know what? Nobody deserves it. But he said, let me show you a better way, is how Paul heard it. And that better way is love. A radical sharing without conditions, and a passionate belief that just us, that we, by rising to the best of who we are together, can bring about changes, can bring about freedom, can bring about hope, can help somebody make it from today to tomorrow. Who thought, how am I going to do it? That was my last can of peas in the cupboard, if I even have a cupboard. Or, how am I going to do it? I'm so angry that all I want to do is just tear things apart and tear people apart. Today's gospel reading may not seem like it has a lot to do with justice of equanimity and justice of distribution. But Christ is teaching us something really, really important. about a justice of the Spirit. And he has told us over and over that if we long and if we hope for justice with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, that we have to learn to be just, become justice in our own self and in our own spirits. So he gave this great teaching today about when you're angry at somebody. Gosh, this one, I hate this scripture sometimes. I really do. I just hate it sometimes. You know, I'm like, really, Christ? Aren't you going to let me off the hook this time? Because usually I'm not an angry person. I'm so nice. I'm so sweet, and I'm so nice, and I'm so understanding, and I'm so pastoral, because that's what I do as a profession, you know. You know, let me off the hook this time. I just want to be angry. I want to be a dragon and go, you know, burn down houses and chew off a few heads and do all of that stuff, you know, because they deserve it, right? I heard amen up here. Well, all right. Yeah, there we go. A few dragons in the house today, right? You know, they deserve it. Oh, and sometimes they do, you know. There's nothing wrong with getting angry, okay? But what Christ is saying, let your anger lead you to justice. Learn how to funnel your justice toward your anger towards something that truly brings about change if you're really angry about something. And if you're really angry at someone, Christ said, first recourse is to do all that you can together to resolve that anger, to find the ways forward as best you can in that. And then you will have justice, and you will be just us once again. But too often we kind of go to the Judge Judy school. Any of you admit to watching Judge Judy in here? Okay. Well, you'll admit it for him, won't you, Andy? Okay. For Andy. Judge Judy drives me crazy. You know, and sometimes I watch it with that car wreck syndrome. I just cannot turn it for some reason, and I hate it. You know, I absolutely hate it, you know, because what I realized when I watch something like that, two things happen within me, right? One thing is I just become so angry and incensed with, you know, one or the other, whichever one it is I'm identifying with, because they both, you know, believe their stories, you know, and stuff about the garage door that was left open when the rain came, and there was $200 worth of damage, and these two people have not spoken to each other for 5 years since because of that, because they're so angry about that, you know, and I'll get just as angry, you know, and that. Or otherwise, you know, I'll go into the other place of superiority. You know, I'll watch them and think, oh, look at them, how ridiculous, you know. They're getting angry over a garage door being open, you know, and a little bit of damage, you know. I'm so glad I'm not like that. I feel better about myself. That's how exploitative justice TV works, right? It does. That's how it works. And some of you may be, anybody from a large family here? Large families. God bless all of you. I only have one sister, and we're enough for each other sometimes. But my grandmother, she came from a 13, you know, 13 children were in the family and stuff. And they were 13 strong personalities, and, you know, they had been brought up to be very proud of themselves, although they came from very humble Appalachian backgrounds and everything, and they had all done pretty well, you know, for themselves and stuff. They were very proud, and they taught us to be proud of who we are and to be proud of the people who love us well and everything. But I swear to goodness, your head would just go around in circles trying to figure out who was mad with whom which year. Right? And sometimes those things would go on for years, and it was always about silly things to us, right? You know, so-and-so came into town, and they stayed with her rather than staying with him, right? And they just decided that that was enough not to talk to each other, and not only for them, but their families couldn't talk to each other. So here we had cousins and relatives and stuff that we couldn't talk. We never knew who we could talk to, you know, for a long time. And sometimes you know, pride can go that way for us in our communities. We have fought so hard to have some sense of pride. And maybe we came from a background that didn't feel like it had enough. Maybe it felt like, maybe we remember how difficult the economic struggle was. Or maybe we remember how difficult it was to face the big isms with our families, our racisms and our sexisms and classisms. Maybe it didn't feel like enough. Maybe it didn't feel like, you know, we had enough opportunity growing up. And maybe you fought really hard to gain the enoughness that you have with your family, with your friends, or whatever. But one of the things that Christ is teaching us is there comes a time when we have to allow that story to change. That no longer are we defined by a story of not having enough or being enough. And when that beautiful moment starts to happen, and we see it time and again as Spirit touches lives, we realize that we have more than enough. We are more than enough to be a blessing to one another. And sometimes the angers that we're not courageous enough to step across and resolve together, we just realize they're just not worth it. Because we'll spend a long time not walking the road with some pretty wonderful people. Not being one body. Not being just us making a difference. One of the things I love about being a part of this denomination is we have always believed passionately in our partnerships with people who are doing justice work in many different ways in this world. And it makes us who we are. We cannot be MCC without our powerful partnerships and being a part of that and letting our stories of learning to be just us, the enoughness of just us, become even part of ever enlarging circles. Enlarging circles. I just made up another word there today. In this world. And the more we're able to enlarge our circles and partner with one another, the greater joy. It's just so wonderful. The greater joy, the greater focus, the greater purpose we are going to feel as one body, not only within these walls, but in our city and in our world as well. And I'm so delighted that during this season, we are going to invite for the next three services, three of our partners. We only have time for one partner for each service today. I want them to introduce to you a little bit about their work and what they're doing and how that really is living out justice for them. And then after the service, give you the opportunity if you'd like to learn more about the organization and the way that we might partner to go and see them afterward. And so today I believe we have Lisa with us. Lisa Weichel, would you please come up? Lisa is from our Hillsboro Homeless Initiative, and I'm sure I'm not quite getting your name because if you saw my notebook fell down up here, and I'm learning better. But thank you so much for coming, and we welcome you to introduce your work to us. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Weichel, and I'm here on behalf of the Tampa Hillsboro Homeless Initiative. But more importantly, I'm here on behalf of the thousands of our neighbors who are with homes tonight and every night in this community. Too often when we think about homelessness, we think of that single gentleman on the corner with that beverage of choice in their hand, thinking, what a bum. Doesn't want to work, just wants to take off the system. I'm not going to help him. I'm not going to help her. They don't deserve it. If they want help, they'll go get into a program. They'll do the work to prove that they deserve help to get into housing. And that's not true. Everyone deserves housing. Statistics and programs show that if you take someone from the street and put them into housing and say, here's services that can help you, they will take those services. Not that they have to, but because they want to. They return to the productive citizens that they were previous to their homeless experience. When you see a person on the street, do you wonder, what was their situation before they ended on the street? I've met a technical engineer who, through a loss of a job and a divorce, lost everything, lived in his truck until he lost that. low-income workers who struggle to make the bills every month, who a child gets sick, healthcare is not paying for it, they end up on the street. People don't want to be homeless. People don't choose to be homeless. Do they choose to give up and accept their situation sometimes? Absolutely. Do they get tired of having to prove that they deserve the dignity of a house, a roof over their head? And so they accept their situation and try to deal with it. They get tired of running into the roadblocks that get in their way of getting back on their feet. The Tampa Hillsborough Homeless Initiative believes that everybody deserves housing right from the start. You don't have to prove that you need, you don't have to prove that you deserve that housing. We are formerly the Homeless Coalition of Hillsborough County, re-energized, reorganized to be the vehicle to reduce and end homelessness in Hillsborough County. And we believe, based on what's worked in other communities, that the only way to do that is through a community effort. Not organization A over here doing it all and B over here trying to do it all and C trying to say they're doing it all. But together as a community, and not just the organizations, the faith communities, the business leaders, the government leaders, everyone needs to be working together. And one of our big efforts is coming up with a community strategy, a single community strategy where we are all working on the same page to the same goal, to end homelessness in Hillsborough County. And you will learn more about that community strategy when it's released at the end of March for public comment, to give us as a community a roadmap to get people off the street and into housing. People often ask me, well, how many people are homeless? The only way that we can find out how many people are homeless is to count them. And how do we count homeless people? We go out onto the street with hundreds of volunteers once a year in a very brief window of time and search out our homeless neighbors, not just to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, but to say, hello, my name is, who are you? Nice to meet you. Are you a man or a woman? Do you have children? How long have you been here? How long have you been on the street? Where did you stay last night? To learn about them, tell us a little bit about you, so that we learn who our homeless neighbors are, so that the programs that are designed with the available resources meet their needs. And that's one of the opportunities I'm here today to offer you, to help end homelessness in Hillsborough County. Help us count to end homelessness. On Thursday, February 27th, the initiative will lead the community in the homeless count between 4 a.m. and 11 p.m. And when I say hundreds of volunteers, I mean at least 500 we need on the street that day. 4-hour shifts. It is a meaningful way to learn more about not just homelessness as a description, but about the people who are affected by homelessness. Volunteers routinely tell me what a life-changing experience it is for them to realize the humanness and the dignity of everybody, whether you have a home or you don't have a home. And so I invite each and every one of you and everyone that you know in your circles of influences to help us count to end homelessness. And I'll be in the back later this morning. I will be able to sign you up to volunteer for that day. And I thank you for this opportunity to share about homelessness and the justice of people deserving housing.
Thank you so much. Last night we had a good time. This place looked a little bit different than it does today. It was our speakeasy, our Grand Gatsby Speakeasy Murder Mystery fundraiser. And a great time was had by all, and a tremendous amount of work went into this fundraiser. I'd want to take just a moment to say thank you to three members of our board of directors who just worked their socks off. Are you wearing any today? No. Oh, they're short. Okay. They used to be taller socks. But anyway, I want to extend a special thank you to Chad, to Lori, and Sonia is working today. I believe she can't be here. And then, of course, to Melissa in the kitchen, but I know that you'll have some words to say about that. But I just wanted to take a moment to allow you to just let's show our gratitude. There was so much hard work